I'm Dr. David Naiman, your host, and this has been Health Watch.
And before we go to Madness Radio, let you know that there is a public hearing on that there is a Sorrows hearing on the Joel Terminal. That will be held Tuesday. That's tomorrow. That will be held January 5th. That's tomorrow. From 1 p.m. until as late as 11 p.m. with a rally at 5 p.m. That is, the rally is at 5 p.m. The public hearing is from 1 p.m. until 11 p.m., and that is at the Clark County Event Center in Ridgefield, Washington. If you need more information on that, check upcoming events at 350pdx.org.
The Cable Community Radio Artist in Residence Program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KABU mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The goals of the KABU Artist Support Program are to support and invest in individuals who are pushing themselves artistically using sound, whose work will impact the cultural landscape of Portland, and to bring those artists into the dynamic KABU community of local, national, and international artists and activists. Applications for the 2016 KABU Artist in Residence are due February 12th at 5 p.m. More information and application materials are at kabu.fm/AIR2016.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices, Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM, the Pacifica Network, and online at madnessradio.net. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today is Leah Harris. Leah is a psychiatric abuse survivor, and both of her parents also experienced psychiatric abuse. She's an organizer with the Campaign for Real Change in Mental Health Policy, and she's just completed an investigative report on the Murphy Bill. The Murphy Bill is legislation before Congress which proposes some very, very controversial changes in mental health policy. So we're going to be speaking about that today on the show. So welcome to Madness Radio, Leah Harris.
Thank you so much for having me, Will.
And Leah, let's see. So you are now organizing and campaigning to stop the Murphy Bill. And the Murphy Bill is the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, H.R. 2646, sponsored by Representative Tim Murphy from Pennsylvania. Tell us about the bill. Why is it generating so much opposition from both the mental health consumer movement and also the disability rights movement?
Well, Will, you know, I think if you just look at the title of the bill, Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, we're all about helping families, helping people who themselves are experiencing distress. But it's very clear that Representative Murphy is very interested in the family perspective. He is not interested in hearing themselves from people who've had these experiences, from people who've been through the system. In fact, he's doing everything he can to make sure our voices are permanently shut out of any decisions regarding policy, regarding federal grants, how our taxpayer money is spent in terms of mental health. He really has demonized us as the problem, instead of looking to us as allies and partners in this discussion about the future of mental health policy in America.
Creating this proposed bill, there's been no consultation or collaboration with leading psychiatric patient consumer advocacy organizations. It's all just coming from a totally different perspective.
Absolutely not. And when you hear him talk, he says, I've talked to thousands of families. And, you know, a lot of us are also family members. I myself am a family member, but he's not interested in hearing from our first person perspective on what it's like to actually use these services and be in these systems.
Well, let's talk about what the bill proposes and where did it come from? What is it sort of the history of this, and what is it that it's actually trying to put into effect?
So yeah, to really understand this bill, you have to understand the context, which really comes out of the horrific, horrific shooting that happened at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, December 14th, 2012. Soon after this shooting, Representative Murphy pretty much appointed himself the crusader to A, end mass shootings, and B, somehow fix the mental health system. So he's really demonizing and scapegoating people with mental health issues for mass shootings and for violence in this country. So understanding that this is really the thrust of the bill. And the other sort of force behind this are family members of adults who have mental health diagnoses. And while I certainly sympathize with the fact that there's terrible services available, there's often very little in the community to support people and families, this is very much a forced treatment and control agenda. So what you see in the bill is basically an increase really supporting what is called assisted outpatient treatment. This is a program that's been championed for a long time by the Treatment Advocacy Center, which is an extremely right-wing organization that is connected with people like E. Fuller Torrey, who has been really trying to push forced treatment approaches for decades. So it's really kind of that's the force and the influence that's behind it. So it's the mass shootings. It's the families who want to increase forced treatment. So in the bill, there would be a 2% increase in block grant funding for states that really implement these so-called assisted outpatient treatment programs. And to be clear what these are, this is actually using all of the mechanisms of a court and a judge to bring someone, you know, before the court and say you must comply with your treatment orders on an outpatient basis. And if you don't, you will be involuntarily committed to a psychiatric hospital. So this is really what is better understood as involuntary outpatient commitment. It's forcing care. It also would lower the standard for getting, you know, put before a judge and being put under AOT orders, which right now it's a danger to self or others. And in some states, it's the quote unquote gravely disabled standard where a person is unable to care for themselves or being perceived as such. It would also now lower that standard to actually include someone who has a history of not complying with treatment. And so that's very concerning because there's all kinds of reasons why people might have a history of not complying with treatment. So we see that this is a really sort of dangerous approach.
And so a version of this was proposed right after the Sandy Hook killings in 2013. And now this is kind of a new version of the same thing. And would you say that it's kind of really capitalizing on the fear that people have?
Yes. I mean, that's absolutely the rhetoric. So after almost every single mass shooting, notably Representative Murphy did not comment on the massacre of parishioners in South Carolina in a black church. But after almost every single mass shooting, he will go on CNN, he'll go on the Sunday talk shows and say, look, this happened because my bill hasn't been passed and we're not getting people, you know, serious mental illness, quote unquote, when untreated is leading to these kinds of crimes. And it's the fault of our government and it's the fault of Congress. And if you passed my bill, this wouldn't happen anymore. So he's literally capitalizing on people's fears around mass shootings.
Okay, so politics is always complicated. So let's see if we can kind of pull this apart, because the other direction that politics goes in after the mass shootings is to talk about gun control. Is it fair to say that in some ways Murphy's impetus for doing this and pushing a mental health agenda instead of a gun control agenda is because of his ties to the National Rifle Association? Is that part of what's going on here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Congressman Murphy has received an A rating from the National Rifle Association for his voting record on gun control. And he's really taking his cues very much from people like, you know, the president of the NRA, Wayne LaPierre. So this is very much a sort of right-wing Republican stance that's been held for a long time. Like, you know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. And, oh, quote-unquote, seriously mentally ill people are the ones that we need to be focused on.
And part of it also, I think, is that a lot of the shootings are motivated by right-wing political ideology. And so you get an instant switch from talking about the politics of the shooters and their right-wing perspective, their racist perspective in some instances, to talking about their mental health issues as if their politics and motivations don't have anything to do with it.
Yes, absolutely. And the NRA piece is just one part of this. The NRA was actually lobbying on the 2013 version of the bill, the first version that was introduced and didn't go anywhere. And now they're really kind of throwing their weight all behind a different bill that focuses on really targeting people with mental health issues for a gun, you know, background check registry. So they're not really, you know, publicly behind the Murphy bill, but they're still very much in the mix in terms of trying to scapegoat this one group of people.
So we should talk a little bit about this whole question of people who don't want to get treatment, who are not getting treatment, or who are not cooperating, who are. Seen as needing to be forcibly involved in the system if they don't cooperate, and then taken and hospitalized if they don't show up and they don't be part of their treatment. Let's talk about that a little bit.
There have been actually two randomized controlled trials that have studied AOT, and actually a third in England, two in the US, one in New York, one in North Carolina, and one in the UK. And what they have found is that they cannot tie the force at all to any sort of improved outcomes, which are sort of staying out of the hospital and staying out of prison. Really what it is the fact that people received very intensive support, like things like supportive housing. You know, their actual environment was addressed. The things that were driving the crisis were addressed. So none of the actual reputable randomized control trials that have looked at AOT have shown that the force has made a difference. And I just want to mention one thing. One of those studies was done in New York, what I mentioned, the randomized control trial of the forced outpatient treatment. And they actually found that 85% of the people who were subjected to this had no history of violence. So really characterizing this as a violence prevention intervention is completely ridiculous. The other thing that we see is that, you know, it's really perpetuating institutional racism in the public mental health system. If you really look at who is getting AOT, it's overwhelmingly people of color and people living in poverty. In New York, you have African Americans receiving court orders five times more often than white people. Same bias in North Carolina, where two-thirds of people who were court-ordered were African-American when they only represent 22% of the state population, and that most of what they're getting are some form of forced medication. What they found in New York is that 88% of these AOT orders had some kind of a forced medication component to them. So, you know, it's very clear what is going on here. And it's not about preventing violence or preventing mass shootings. It's about really, you know, controlling people of color and marginalized people.
And so the idea is that if actually this was to be implemented, it's not actually going to primarily affect people who have any kind of history of violence, and it's going to disproportionately affect people of color. And so it's going to recreate a lot of the racism that we see institutionally and structurally with the mental health system.
I'm completely against the mass incarceration of people with mental health issues. That is unacceptable. And the Murphy bill is kind of being used as a pretext, like, oh, look, it's horrible. People are being warehoused in jails. Jails are the new mental hospitals. But this is not the answer. And another piece to the bill also would involve loosening the restrictions on Medicaid coverage for institutions, which again is seen as an alternative to incarceration. Oh, let's not put them in jail. let's make it easier for people to be institutionalized.
So we start to see how this is really part of it's a pattern. There's a consistent thread that runs through this bill, which is the fear and demonization of people with mental illness diagnosis. And so you're really talking about, you know, a bill that's going backwards, because from the standpoints of how people get better, getting them into the community is the direction we need to be going, not back in the direction of the asylums and the state hospitals and the large-scale warehousing of the past. And so this bill actually starts heading in that regressive direction.
Yes, exactly. And this gets really wonky. I won't go into all of the details, but there, you know, when Medicaid was enacted, they put a restriction on financing for adult psychiatric hospitalization and large facilities, larger than 16 beds. And this bill would partially lift that so that states could get, you know, billions of dollars in grants towards institutional care. And any sort of reinvestment would not necessarily have to be into community services. So they'd be getting Medicaid funding for institutions, but any savings to the state they could use for whatever they want. They don't have to use it for community mental health services.
So the bill claims to be saying, look, there's this need out there. People are in mental health crisis. Let's help them. But actually the very sponsor of the bill is actually also responsible for preventing the proper funding of community services that people actually do need.
Yeah. And I should also say that, you know, people have a lot of mixed feelings about Medicaid and all of this, but Representative Murphy has consistently voted against Medicaid expansion, which creates barriers for people who have, you know, low income folks who have mental health struggles or addiction struggles who are actually voluntarily trying to get help. So he's opposing one financing mechanism that would actually allow people, you know, greater access to services. It just shows the hypocrisy in terms of his direction. And you're right. It's an absolutely regressive direction. It's the worst possible direction we could be going in.
Have the pharmaceutical companies weighed in on this? Is this the kind of thing that they support and lobby for?
So yeah, there have been many pharmaceutical companies who have supported the bill, both in the previous version and in this version. And I should say that pharma supports Republicans, it supports Democrats, you know, no one's hands are completely clean. And this is a much larger conversation about money and politics. But what we, my co-author Christian Exu and I are focused on in our piece is Otsuka Pharmaceuticals, which is the maker of Abilify. And they're, you know, their place behind this bill. Otsuka has just applied for approval for this new version of Abilify that includes a microchip to monitor adherence. And what this chip does is it sends radio signals out as the lining of the stomach as the pill is digested, so that the doctors and courts can monitor whether or not a patient is actually taking the pills. Okay. So Otsuka has been lobbying very heavily on the bill, and it's very important to note that they stand to lose a lot of money by Abilify, regular Abilify, not microchip Abilify, going off patent. So this is really important to understand that this is a huge, huge part of Otsuka Pharmaceuticals' budget, and that they stand a lot to lose if, you know, Abilify goes generic.
So a pharmaceutical company, they create a drug, they put it on the market, they charge really high prices for it, they make lots of profit, but then there's an expiration date on the patent. And when that expires, boom, the generic drugs can come in and they don't make as much money.
Yes. And remember that AOT, this quote unquote AOT, so-called assisted outpatient treatment, which is forcing someone to receive treatment in the community, that it relies very heavily on medication. And that if you look at this population are the people who are quote unquote non-compliant, they would be the perfect market for a bill that monitors compliance. And they've been lobbying, Otsuka's been lobbying heavily on this bill. So starting in 2014, they quintupled their lobbying budget. So in 2013, it was $250,000 a year, which is like a drop in the bucket for them, to more than $1 million a year in 2014 and 2015. And our source on this is Open Secret. And then they've spent at least $320,000 hiring separate lobbying firms on the previous version of the Murphy bill. And then this year, they've already spent $190,000. The bill's only been out for 6 months since it's been introduced. So they've spent $190,000 on the new version of the bill. And they've also donated very heavily to groups that have not in really any way criticized the Murphy Bill and have been supportive.
So Otsuka Pharmaceuticals stands to basically earn a lot of money if this bill passes.
Absolutely. Almost half of their annual revenue comes from Abilify. So this would really cause them to lose its very, very lucrative monopoly and half its revenue. It's just so transparent if you look at the money.
So we're kind of, you know, in kind of examining this bill, and I think this is one of the reasons that I was so interested in inviting you on the show, is that we're sort of seeing the complex reality of how deeply concerning and deeply corrupted mental health policymaking is in the United States, and how predatory it is on people's fears and misinformation, and obviously the concerns that so many of us have to provide better services, the concerns that so many of us have that the criminal justice system has so many people with diagnosis in it, the concerns that so many of us have to respond in a meaningful way to these mass shootings just gets preyed upon by a very, very different political and economic and set of business interests.
Absolutely. And I haven't even gotten to the hospital industry's role in this bill. Lots of people have heard of Big Pharma, but not as many people have heard of the National Association of Psychiatric Hospital Systems. They would love for his bill to be implemented. It would be a huge boon to business, to their hospitals, both with the AOT for people who don't comply and then are forced to be hospitalized, as well as the increased inpatient payments. So like from 2003 to 2012, NAFS, which is the acronym, National Association of Psychiatric Hospital Systems, donated just about $1,000 a year to Murphy. Not really that much. But then in January 2013, they started really plying him with cash and gave unprecedented donations to him. And if you look at their policy agenda for 2015, it includes the Murphy Bill. Their connection is really substantial. Their board of trustees is loaded with the top brass from the major psychiatric and mental health hospitals and all the for-profit treatment chains. Individual staff of NAFS and lobbyists are also Murphy donors. So you just really see the cozy relationship, A, with pharma, and B, with these for-profit hospital chains, that they are very cozy with Murphy. And one thing, another thing I should add about the bill is while he is supporting increased institutionalization, he actually wants to limit the ability of the Protection and Advocacy for Individuals with Mental Illness, the PAMI program. PAMI advocates in every single state help to connect people with those kinds of supports that will help them to get out of the revolving door system.
We know that there are a number of leading consumer survivor organizations that are against it, but what kind of diverse coalition is saying no to the Murphy Bill at this point?
So, yeah, I would really encourage people to go to the Protect PAMI website, and we can put a link along with the show to the Protect PAMI website, as well as the Campaign for Real Change in Mental Health Policy website, which really shows the variety of opposition. So you have obviously the cross disability agencies, the National Council on Independent Living. You have the American Civil Liberties Union has come out against this bill. Service Employees International Union also has spoken out against the bill because of how these for-profit hospital chains, you know, really cut corners and don't hire enough people to actually help people or support people, and that it really causes a lot of problems. Obviously, the National Disability Rights Network is against this. The National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery, which is run by people who have actual lived experience with the mental health system. Domestic violence groups are really opposed to this bill because of privacy issues. The Autistic Self-Advocacy Network is against this bill. It's largely people who have had these experiences themselves, or civil rights organizations, people who are not tainted by pharmaceutical or hospital industry money.
So let's turn for a moment, because one of the things that drives this legislation and other kinds of legislation is the upset nationwide that happens whenever there's a mass shooting. People are killed, and then people want to do something. Part of what we're dealing with here is that this legislation takes a discussion that could be about gun control and then puts it on mental health. And so one of the things that we have heard a lot about is the idea of like, well, you know, we need these background checks on gun owners because we know that, you know, mental illness is such an important reason why people are doing these terrible things. And there's a limit also to that perspective, that kind of thinking. Let's talk about that a little bit.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the research is really, really clear that people who have a mental health diagnosis, and Representative Murphy is specifically going after people who are diagnosed with what is called serious mental illness. So we're talking about schizophrenia, bipolar, major depression. This is not the population of people that are committing gun crime. People with these diagnoses, first of all, commit maybe 3% to 5% of crime. That's including gun crime. So really, these background checks are just a joke because they're focusing on a very small group of people, A, who've been diagnosed so that they, you know, already have a history, and that these are not folks who are committing the mass shootings overall or gun crimes overall. This is very calculated to, like, let's just target this tiny group of people that we are saying are responsible for all this violence so that we don't have to really look at, how about alcohol? You know, there are new laws, I believe, in Texas and Georgia and other places that let you bring guns into bars, even though we've seen that the vast majority of shootings, domestic violence and other defined mass shootings, and has some component with alcohol. So let's just target this really small group of people who's actually not driving the problem while we leave, you know, the rest of the population to pack as they will.
Yeah, the rate of violence among the general background population is actually higher than the rate of violence among people who have a mental illness diagnosis. So it's actually the reverse. It's not that people have a higher rate of violence because they're diagnosed with mental illness. It's actually less. So again, it's that scapegoating dynamic. Leah, you co-wrote an expose about the Murphy bill. Do you want to say a little bit about that? We don't have much time, but tell us a little bit about that. People can take a look at it.
So as I mentioned, my co-author, Christian Exu, and I really, you know, we know that money is in politics. And so we looked at it through the lens of this one bill, and we looked at it through the lens of Otsuka Pharmaceuticals and their sort of outrageous microchipped medications. But, you know, we're very clear that this is part of a much, much larger pattern. And we may not be able to go deeply into that in this piece, but we really want to show what's really behind this whole debate. So we're going to be putting out information about Otsuka that, you know, the public really is not aware of. Nobody's that I know of has kind of put all the pieces together. Some of us have heard about the microchip pill. Some of us have heard about the Murphy bill, you know, all of this. But really, we need to understand the full picture to be informed, you know, in this whole situation. So we're really focusing on just that piece of it. But, you know, I think this is an issue that can unite people who are working on all different kinds of single issues. And I really strongly believe that, just like Audre Lorde said, you know, there's no such thing as a single issue struggle because we don't lead single issue lives. But this is the issue that underlies all of the issues of injustice and inequality in this country and who is running the show. So, you know, we're very much wanting to kind of point the public in that direction with this piece to understand that these people who are claiming to be, you know, working in our best interests really are not working in our interests at all. And they're playing on our fears, our insecurities, and they're demonizing people with mental health issues, all in the name of really perpetuating the same old agenda.
Leah, we are just about out of time. So give us information about how people can contact you, how they can find out more about the Murphy bill, and what they can do if they want to be involved in the effort to stop the Murphy bill.
Great. Yes. Thank you. And we will make sure to have the links to this accompanying the show. The Protect PAMI, PAIMI website lists all the different groups who are opposed to the bill. RealMHChange.org, that's our website, Campaign for Real Change in Mental Health Policy. The National Coalition for Mental Health Recovery has been working on this, NCMHR.org. There you can find out more. We're updating our Real Campaign for Mental Health Change website all the time. So you can stay up to date. We have a list of statements. You can contact us through there. The media is also invited to contact us through there to really get the full picture of what's happening with this bill. And really, the point is to really get to a point where we promote a policy agenda. We're not just opposing something, but we're promoting a progressive, true policy agenda for mental health.
And thank you so much for being with us on Madness Radio.
Thanks so much. Always great to be on, Will.
You've been listening to an interview with Leah Harris. She's an organizer with the Campaign for Real Change in Mental Health Policy and has just completed an investigative report on the Murphy Bill, which is H.R. 2646, the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Madness Radio is sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices. Host is Will Hall and producer is Nina Packabush. Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO FM and the Pacifica Network, and shows are archived online at madnessradio.net.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the noontime jamboree. Come on, come on, come on, come on.
For a long time now, I've been trying to make a go, picking and a singing on a country.